We get things underway by getting on the G&M Family Market phone line for our weekly visit with writer Colin Fleming. Colin, a good Tuesday afternoon to you.
Hey, how are you, buddy?
Well, I'm doing just great, thanks. Although I've rolled up my sleeves, I'm ready to maybe get into some fisticuffs here with you over the Baseball Hall of Fame.
That's how it works with the Baseball Hall of Fame, right? People, they start to throw hands.
They do, and I'm with you. I don't understand it. I've always been, I'm an inclusive Hall of Fame kind of guy. The more, the merrier. I don't get too upset about it, but you've got some bold stances that you're going to put out there for us today.
Maybe a little bold. And you know what? I also like a big Hall of Fame because it's cool to see your favorite players have something after their career that you get a little excited about, right? But at the same time, if there are going to be these mega standards in place, I think there's just too much inconsistency. And one of the things that I really cannot stand in sports, I don't think there is any cheaper stat than a save. A save is utterly meaningless to me if you're a closer. You come into a game, it is 5-2, and if you register 3 outs, meaning you keep your mighty ERA under 9, you get a nice save for yourself. So basically, you just have to be trotted out there, maintain an ERA between like 3 and 8, and you'll get 40 a year. To me, a closer, what matters is how you do it when everything is on the line and there is no wiggle room for a mistake. So I guess you might be referring to our email exchange about Mariano Rivera.
Yeah, both Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman, and you say no to both.
I say no, a hard no to Hoffman, because you are playing in this market where it's like three's company. People would rather be at the beach. No one cares about those games. You're not in the playoffs. When you were in the playoffs, you defecated all over the bed. You just rack up these saves in this meaningless, low-pressure environment. Like, what does that mean? That, what's kind of the quotient for that for a career, value-wise? It seems very little to me. As for Rivera, yeah, he's a much better pitcher than Hoffman. But when your job is to put the boot on the throat and end the other team, and you are directly responsible for your team not winning not one but 2 World Series, that's nuts to me. You cost your teammates 2 World Series. That's just, I don't know how you reconcile that with someone who does the best possible job that can be done in that position.
All right, while we're talking pitchers, let's bring up these two, Curt Schilling and Pedro Martinez. One is in, one is beloved, one is out, and now despised by a good portion of the country.
Yes, he's quite disliked. But you know what? People say the things they say. Can you imagine if we knew, for instance, what so many of these people who are not despised like Schilling do on the road? Can
well,
you imagine
absolutely.
The level of marital infidelity that goes on? And I'm thinking, if you have a spouse and you have children, infidelity is a lot worse than just saying moronic things. Everyone pretty much says moronic things. It's just like some of us specialize in the moronic things we say in a given category, right? But everyone has some kind of like pet opinion or something along those lines. Pedro Martinez, I enjoyed watching him pitch, but he just frustrated me so much because he came of age really as a pitcher of dominance in the pitch count era. And he was great for 5 innings. And if another team could hang with him through those 5 innings, like the Yankees, they could outweigh him. He wasn't the guy who was going to be the guy who delivered you a championship. And when he did have his championship in 04, he was sidecar. And Schilling was someone, yes, his ERA over his career was higher, but he was that, you hitch up the cart to a guy like that. And I think he's directly responsible for 2 championships. I think he was, with Randy Johnson, every bit as important for that Diamondback team. And not only did he change the culture with the Red Sox, he was the horse. He was the 20-plus game winner that year. And his postseason record is so sparkling. It's almost like you need sunglasses to be able to deal with it. And I think that's really what matters, how you perform when everything is on the line.
Well, I'm with you on Schilling. I think he does deserve to be in. And I hear what you're saying about Pedro. I mean, if you needed a guy to go out there and give you eight innings. Of those two, Pedro was not your guy.
No, he would get outweighed when it became those games that started lasting 4.5 hours. And I think you almost do not want to be a strikeout pitcher. People love, they fetishize strikeouts. Like, I can scarcely believe it. And you hear that all the time with Kimbrel, who is basically a heart attack waiting to happen every time he comes into the game, starts yanking pitches. But hey, he threw 101 and punched some people out. But it's endurance. It's how long can you last, especially for a starter now. And if you don't have that horse-like build, you're going to wear down. You'd rather have the tapper to second base over and over again. And I think that brings me to the player I think is the most overrated in the history of North American professional sports.
Yes.
And he received, I believe, the third most highest percentage for the Hall of Fame, and that is Nolan Ryan, who is beloved simply because of the particular way in which he recorded many outs. An out is an out is an out is an out. Like, it doesn't really matter how you get it. And you pitch for 25 years. And in those years, when you can just go as many innings as you wish, there's no pitch count, you can't win 20 games more than twice, and you manage two different times, this is remarkable, to walk 200 people in a season? That's very difficult. I mean, unless you're like Hoyt Wilhelm and you're pitching 400 innings with your knuckleball, 200 bases on balls? That's nuts.
Well, yeah, and a lot of those years, he struggled to break 500 with some, not great teams, but some pretty decent teams with the Angels, with the Astros. But yeah, he was a guy that was as likely to throw a no-hitter, well, actually more likely to go out there and walk the ballpark and be out of there by the fifth inning.
What's more meaningless than a no-hitter? Like, it's just a statistical anomaly, basically, right? It's like kind of a poor man's version of, remember when Mario Lemieux scored 5 goals 5 different ways in the game, and it was even strength, power play, shorthanded, overtime, penalty shot, right? It's like neat, but it's just like a quirk. A lot of guys who are not very good throw no-hitters. You need to be on that day. You need luck. And Nolan Ryan, over his entire career, was a little bit above 500. And he never, really, again, amazing, won a Cy Young Award. Other guys, Seaver, Steve Carlton, they were pitching circles around this guy. He was entertaining if you like people like, I don't know, Kenny Skywalker, because he was good at dunking the ball. But he wasn't like Pippen. He wasn't this all-around asset. And I feel like Nolan Ryan was almost kind of like this sideshow element. Like when you go to the zoo and like there's the elephant and he's all really efficacious in what he does. But oh, look, there's a duck-billed platypus. You don't see many of those. I think that was Nolan Ryan.
Well, and he led the league in strikeouts 10 times, but he also led the league in walks 8 times, dominated that category through the 70s. And I don't know that anybody will do this again because of the way pitchers are used these days. But he had 11 straight seasons of double-digit losses.
I don't know why people love strikeouts so much. Do you? Like, it's the same thing. If you can go out there and you go through your inning, they call it this immaculate inning now, where 9 pitches and they're all strikes and they're just 3 strikeouts. Wouldn't it be far better just to have 3 tappers back to the mound on 3 pitches?
Right.
Like, an out is just, it's an out. It's like a goal in hockey, whether you wrap it around from behind the net or you have a glorious, glorious snipe under the crossbar from the slot. It's the same exact thing. And it's not the exact same thing, though, in baseball, because it wears you down. So you almost don't even want the strikeout, because you will be able to be on the field for less time to help your team.
Well, we saw that right in Boston last year with Chris Sale and his 300 strikeouts, but when they needed him most, he was not so good.
Strikeout is really just, to me, if you're a relief pitcher and you come in and it's one of those situations where that ground ball to second, because there are runners on second and third, say, and you don't want to walk that guy with an intentional pass, gets in the run. That's when the strikeout matters. But like with closers, I look at people now from the past, like a Bruce Sutter, and you would get 110 innings out of a guy like that. You'd only have the 25 saves. But in like 1998 with Mariano Rivera, guy's throwing 60 innings. And I could have closed for that Yankees team. So what does that really mean? that team might have been the best team of all time. And they're practically the exact same team without someone like that.
Well, and we see guys today that even their managers concede are not the best guys in the bullpen, but they don't get those high leverage situations in the ninth inning with nobody on base. Those situations come in the sixth, the seventh, or the eighth.
I think that's really where the game is radicalized, where you are following that. Now, it's a problem for the pitchers because contractually, it's still working out that you get paid more for the saves.
Right.
But that notion of floating a guy around to the most important situation is conceptually the way to go. That's really, I think, what you see that with Andrew Miller. Mm. Remember even before the Red Sox had their glory run, Derek Lowe, that role he would play,
right,
where he might come in for, he was kind of like a thin, later day Dick Raddatz. He would come in for the four innings. And that was just so valuable with those late 90s teams. And I guess the one thing with the strikeout now is players hit the ball so hard that it's a little bit different when you put the ball in play. I feel like now you almost have a better chance for a hit because the fielders, their range is almost cut down with how hard the ball is moving now off the bat, the whole launch speed and all of that. So I get that, but I mean, back in Ryan's time, that was not an issue. If you look at the stats like in the mid-70s, you could hit 32 home runs and you would lead the league like Craig Nettles did once. So you can't get a Cy Young award and you didn't have one season where you were 24-7? That's weird.
We're talking with Colin Fleming. Let's shift gears over to hockey. The NHL All-Star Game over the weekend. Brad Marchand representing the Bruins, suspension and all. He's an interesting guy, so much talent, but gets himself in trouble and seemingly can't stop that. But as you say, this may also be evidence of a league that's gone a little too soft.
Oh, I know this is wrong, but I'm pretty pro-injury. I don't mean like you Clint Malarchuk someone or you use your stick to the back of their head, but an elbow and a concussion or something like that, like teeth knocked out, that's policing the game. That's attitude. That's intimidation. That's, hey, you maybe don't want to come down this wing anymore. I like that. To me, you're penalized for that. You go into the box for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, maybe you get a game misconduct, but you just throw an elbow at someone's head and you're out again, suspended? That's nuts. I don't believe in that. Marchand, he's a weird player because not a lot of guys are kind of like serviceable to plus serviceable. Then in their late 20s, they become elite. He is right now, he's one of the top five or six players in the league. I think if he didn't have his suspension issues and didn't miss as many games as he does, he could win the Hart. I mean, he has 50 points in 38 games. Nowadays, right? So if you have 70 points in the season now, that's basically like 105 back in the 1980s. He's like a 130-point guy, really, if you convert things. And he is easily their best offensive player. He's their best player.
We were talking about this earlier today, I think before the show, about the skills competition. And you did some research on the best slap shooters in history. And, well, I'm curious. You've teased me a little bit here. The most slap shot goals in league history, number two, is a Boston guy.
Yes. Now, I don't know this for a statistical fact. I don't even know if this stat is out there. But I was wondering to myself, who would have the most slap shots in league history? And I think there are only five guys that are possibly in that discussion. One of them is Bobby Hull. Not Brett Hull, because he scored a lot in the snapshot from the slot. You would have Al MacInnis. Mm-hmm. Alex Ovechkin, right? He has to be up there now. And I think number two is Ray Bourque.
Ray Bourque is
in many ways the perfect hockey player. I think he might be the most perfect hockey player in league history. To have a 20-year career, and every single year almost, you are a first or second team all-star. You play over half the game. Think of that career value. And Jaromir Jagr, we saw yesterday that his NHL career is basically over now. Think about this. Jagr has the second most points of all time. He led the league in assists three times, and he doesn't have as many career assists as Ray Bourque.
Wow.
I mean, that's almost like you do a double take and you recheck Hockey Reference. Bourque was the master of the half slap shot from the blue line. And every time I watch Chara and him tilt his stick up to the roof in the rafters, and missed the net by 5 feet, there is an artistry to, all you have to do is get it through. There are so many bodies in front of the net. And how many goals did Bork score? You have to figure for his career, more than half of his goals must have been on slap shots.
Well, I'm going home tonight. I'm going to go home and go through Baseball Reference. I'm going to look at Mariano Rivera's numbers. I've got a lot to think about, Colin. So you've given me, you give me a headache, but in a good way, because I've got to research this now.
Well, who do you think would have the most slap shot goals of all time?
God.
I bet you I am right on this, and I bet it's not close. The center.
I'm not sure.
Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, well, all right.
Come down the right wing. Just type it in like on YouTube. Cut across the center. And I've never seen anyone shoot a puck like this. He had basically this fadeaway slap shot where he would outweight the goalie would commit, and he'd put it right under the bar.
I'd have guessed Stan Mikita, but that's because I'm old.
And are you Polish? Polish people like
that. Absolutely. Hey, Colin, always fun talking with you. Thanks so much for being with us. By the way, I want to mention, too, be looking for it this weekend, right? You've got your first piece in USA Today.
Yes, it's on how you can basically be the new apex member of society, not on talent, just by simply not being wretched at your job.
It's something I strive for, and I'm still working on every single day. We'll look forward to it. Thanks, Colin.
All right, I'll see you.
You got it. Colin Fleming, every Tuesday on Downtown.